Come to order, and may we please stand for a pledge allegiance to the flag, and would you please remain standing as the invocation will be given by Pastor Dave Kerr, Trinity United Presbyterian Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And will you pray with me? Lord, we are grateful and thankful for the privilege and opportunity to be able to meet this evening. Thank you for the Board of Supervisors, the wisdom and guidance that you've given them. Tonight we pray particularly that you would give them great wisdom and great guidance as they look at the needs of our county. We thank you for just the privilege and opportunity to be able to look at those needs, knowing that in the scope of things, Lord, that you have a plan and a purpose for each and every life. So would you bless the proceedings that take place in these next few minutes and hours, that they would be filled with your guidance and your direction, that the needs that are presented would be such that we'd be able to see you do a mighty work in this wonderful county. We pray all this in the Master's name. Amen.
Thank you. We now will go into public comment, and we have Miguel Venoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Me and Mr. Mataka, we're going to speak in regard to four issues. One is regard to the housing, the other one is jobs, education, and health. The county received over $1 billion budget, have already approved for the year 2015-2016. But the problem in our county continue with over 10,000 gang members in our community. We have job training by the Alliance to train the skills of future skilled workers for different kind of jobs that don't exist in this county. We have the housing element as being uncompliance according to the California Rural Legal Assistance. We have a problem with housing for the farm workers, the large family, and single mother families. We have a problem in this county, it's not enough houses. And yet you receive federal and state money to do something. In regard to the education, the Latinos, I'm talking about the Latinos in this community, dropping out the highest percentage in this county. The health services for the low-income families and farm workers is very difficult to receive that kind of services. We have clinics and doctor hospital that not have enough to receive the indigenous people and people that don't have the insurance in this county. You receive federal and state money according to the low incomes and very low income families and minorities. In this case, these Latinos are the highest minorities in this county, and with a poor high education, no job available for the unskilled or semi-skilled workers in this county, and yet you receive a lot of these funds. So Mr. Mataka is going to bring you a letter in regard to that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Miguel. Next speaker is John Mataka.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm going to read you a letter that I'm going to have a copy for each of you and one for the clerk. It's dated March 15, 2016, to Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors from Miguel Donoso and John X. Mataka. The subject is formation of ad hoc committee. For the year 2015-2016, your budget is just over $1 billion. Between 60 to 70% of the billion-dollar budget is money you receive from the state or federal government. With this in mind, we formally request documentation on how you are spending this money in four areas. The four areas are housing, education, employment, and health. We are interested in how Stanislaus County is spending state and federal funds to improve the quality of life for Latinos in the area where there are high Latino concentrations. Some of the areas of concern are the Airport District, South Modesto Crow's Landing Road area, West Side Modesto, West Side of Stanislaus County, Riverbank, etc. We formally request you to appoint an ad hoc committee to investigate and report back to the community. The ad hoc committee should look at quality of life issues for Latinos in the past 10 years. In closing, if you refuse to appoint an ad hoc committee to investigate your progress in the above four areas, we will have no choice but to contact the San Francisco office of the ACLU about possible litigation. Sincerely, Miguel Donoso, John X. Mataka. And it has a note here, please respond within 15 days. That's all I have on that issue, but I have one quick thing here. I won't be staying for the rest of the meeting, but you have on the agenda, and normally I would wait, but I ask your okay for this. You have on the agenda Suicide Prevention Innovation Project to vote on. I'm going to ask you to support that. I'm going to tell you why. Because within the last 8 months at Patterson High School, there have been two young students that have hung themselves and committed suicide at Patterson High School. It's an increasing issue with young people, and I believe that there needs to be some kind of focus groups out there where young people tell us what the issues are around the issue of suicide and not us telling them what we think it is. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. The next speaker is Rebecca Harrington.
Good evening, Chairman Monteith and esteemed members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. I've just kind of been really busy this last month doing all kinds of things in the community. And one thing in particular that has been brought to the forefront, and I know that you're aware of, we have Mancini Park, which is a city-owned park surrounded by county properties. In my son's research, he found that park was given by Frank and Ione Mancini because they had no children, so they wanted to give back to this community in a very charitable manner. Throughout the years, that property has, that park has just really gone downhill, desperately downhill. The city has signed an agreement with Verizon to put a cell phone tower there. So in our further research, we found that they received $10,000, and then they will be getting $1,700 a month. The money, less 10% off the top, goes to the Tuolumne River Regional Park, part of the JPA. That's what we were told. When we looked further into the actual paperwork, it really doesn't. It gets kind of get dumped into a general fund, of which the city receives about $500,000 a year from cell phone towers. And we're actually actively researching as to what amount of that money is going back into the parks. With that being said, then there's another issue. They have a house there that's been there forever. It's the original Mancini home. They've been collecting rent on it for over 40 years, and I kind of calculated at $500 a month rent, which I think is very reasonable. Over 40 years, it was about collection of about $240,000, which they have dumped into their negative rental property fund. So we're going to be going to the meeting tomorrow in hopes that we can get some answers about how we can better serve our community with that park, because we don't have, as you all know, we don't have a community, community meeting place for the children. We don't have any of those things out there, and we really want to look at it. And I know that they don't want to relinquish that property, but I'm really hoping that the Board of Supervisors will support us in trying to get something better than what we have out there. And I did find out one thing. I had $2,277 on deposit with the Stanislaus Foundation. They failed to mention to me that they closed that account and moved that money over to somewhere else. And I understand they line itemed it, but I just feel the non-transparency that they have given to us as a community has been very disparaging for us and very dismissive. And I'm hoping that the board, and Mr. DeMartini will be able to give us a little more support in trying to organize better there. We have a very large group of people who are coming together for cleanup on the 19th. We have a gentleman out there who runs six little teams of soccer players, and they're in dire need of little uniforms, about $400 a team, so about $2,400. He's not a 501c3. He's not anything. He's just a community member who is wanting to help the children. So we're trying to find out how we can get him some money to buy uniforms for those children. And I just want to put it out there that our community, just as the rest of South Modesto, we have a lot of groups out there that are really trying to make better, that we don't need neighborhood, Modesto Neighborhood Inc. for $900,000 over the next 4 years from the city of Modesto to tell us how to organize. But I'm hoping that with your support in helping us find some avenues to help those children, that we can make a better place for our kids to play in, have some suitable park equipment, and have a safe community center that we could eventually call our own and hopefully bring great programs of after-school education, some place to meet, a safe venue, and something that the community could be proud of. Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to make one public comment? If not, we will then now go on. I'm asking come right ahead. Pardon me.
We're debating. This is a downer, but it has a good ending. So, good evening, and Supervisor, CEO Risen, and County Council Doering. Jesse McCartney, a homeless man who got pneumonia, was treated for it and released. He went back to the streets where his condition worsened and then ended up back in the hospital with frostbite. Both of his feet were amputated due to frostbite. One of his legs got infected and had to be amputated at the thigh. The infection was too much for his weakened immune system, and he went into hospice and passed away on March 10, 2016. Jesse McCartney was 30 years old and a resident of Oakdale. Jesse McCartney is our worst fears realized. As we are sitting in our heated homes during a frost warning and the media is telling us to bring in our pets and cover our plants, deep in the back of our minds we think about the homeless. They'll find a place to take shelter, we tell ourselves. There's warm places they can go, but now we know that they don't all make it to a warm place. In what many consider the greatest country in the world, and in the most populous state in which people flock to for its warmth, it seems absolutely ludicrous that we lost one of our own to frostbite. Focus on Prevention's initiative on homelessness may be moving slower or be more complex than you had anticipated, but it's moving along and moving in the right direction. For example, I've lived in Salida for 23 years and did not even know until 2014 that Salida has a homeless population. I just had to open my eyes to them. Now I'm beginning to talk to them. I had my son with me one day when I spoke with a homeless man in Salida several months ago. The other day, my son saw the man on Pellendale in the cold and bought him a coffee and sandwich. I can't even begin to tell you how proud I am of my son for doing that. But the important thing to point out here is that the homeless are no longer invisible, and you are getting through to us that it takes a village. Someone you really need to know about too is Teresa Gamboa. She has helped three people off the streets this year, and it's only March. She is someone we need to emulate, and perhaps you have an award that you can recognize her service to our community. It's an understatement to say that you took on a biggie when you decided to start with homelessness for Focus on Prevention. I know you plan to move on to other initiatives, and that Children and Families is slated for 2017 on the Focus on Prevention website. Jesse McCartney became homeless at age 8 or 9 and apparently fell through the cracks as his life ended as a result of homelessness. The Children and Families initiative could have helped Jesse if it had existed 22 years ago, and it will help people like him when it's launched. But I hope that you will consider continuing the homeless initiative until we have no more homeless in Stanislaus County, and Jesse McCartney becomes the last resident of Stanislaus County to die from complications of frostbite due to homelessness. Thank you for starting and implementing Focus on Prevention. You're giving the other Jesse McCartneys of Stanislaus County the chance he didn't have. Thank you.
Thank you. Catherine, would you give your name for the record?
Oh, please. Catherine Borges from Salida.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing on public comment? Step forward, please.
Good evening. I think this is actually my first meeting I've attended with Mr. DiMartini, or I'm sorry, Mr. Monteith is the chair. So this is a nice change.
Please give your name
Amanda
for the record,
Sorensen,
please.
Salida resident. I agree with Catherine. I think the focus on prevention with homeless is a great program to start with. I think it's really helping not just the people in Salida, but I think it's good for all of Stanislaus County. It brings us all together to help with the homeless people and really help them and not just, you know, go out and give them blankets when it's cold or maybe give them a coffee, but to actually give them the support services that they need to fully help them long-term and not just the short-term issues. And then second is I just got back from the Pellendale meeting in Modesto, and I was very glad that the project is still on track, it's still funded, and I was especially glad that the Pellendale overpass was opened early due to the water main break. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Stan Risen, our CEO, would like to make a comment, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one clarification. I appreciate Mrs. Borges' comments and her own personal dedication as she's come alongside us on her focus on prevention effort. And I want to assure you that we are not going to move from one topic onto another and leave it abandoned. In fact, just last week, the Board of Supervisors approved a housing and supportive services manager so that we could begin taking a even more active role in helping coordinate all our service providers and a lot of the silos that are out there trying to do good things alone. So even as we begin to increase our focus in other areas, let me assure you we will not be abandoning our efforts or our energy as it relates to homeless services.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to make public comment? If not, I will ask the County Council to give a report on our closed special session.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, reporting out of closed session from the March 15th, 2016 special meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors to conference with legal counsel to discuss one matter of anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D4. Upon motion of Supervisor O'Brien, seconded by Supervisor DiMartini, the Board of Supervisors unanimously authorized legal counsel for the county to take all reasonable and necessary steps, including initiation of litigation, to overturn the decision of the Director of California Department of Public Health to disallow costs of temporary employees working in the Women, Infants, and Children program for fiscal year 2011 through 2012.
Thank you. We'll go to consent calendar. Is there anyone on the board wishing to pull any of the items? If not, before the board takes any action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and what's the board's desire. Looking for a motion.
Make a
motion.
I'll second.
You second it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Pass. We now will go to B7 and approval to adjust fiscal year 2015-16 Mental Health Service Act plan updated. And at this time, we'll have Madeline. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairman Monteith, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doering. I'm very excited to be here tonight, and I think that you can tell from Mr. Mataka's comments that this topic is very close to many hearts. We had tremendous energy on our representative, the Mental Health Service Act Representative Stakeholder Steering Committee. When we brought this up, a lot of conversation and a unanimous vote to approve this intervention, suicide prevention intervention project. A little bit on the national level, there are approximately 40,000 deaths that occurred in 2014 due to suicide. One suicide happens about every 20 minutes. The 10th overall cause of death in the United States is suicide, and the third leading cause of death in adolescents is suicide. And that is certainly borne out by the recent comments about the youngsters in high school. Locally, we've brought to your attention the health status profile data analysis, which the California Department of Public Health puts out. It showed that the suicide rate in Stanislaus County was 11 per 100,000 population. In California, the rate is 10.2 per 100,000, and the national objective is 10.2. So we're considerably above that. Now, that reflects information between 2011 and 2013. Also, we had the information from the Community Assessment Planning and Evaluation Report, the CAPE, which indicated that 231 lives were lost between 2010 and 2014 to suicide, and that those with a contact with a mental health provider, either public or private, decreased over those 5 years from 37% to 19%. So clearly, the mental health profession is not seeing those individuals who actually do commit suicide, the majority of them. Although we know the risk factors many times for suicide, predicting when someone is going to do that is much more difficult. 70% of the individuals who made a lethal suicide attempt made the decision in less than 1 hour. 24% of those that made a near lethal attempt made the decision in less than 5 minutes. So the time is just is very narrow. So obviously, that gap, that small narrow gap, means that the only strategy to reduce suicide rate is through prevention and intervention efforts. However, the strategies need to be targeted, and that is part of this innovation project. Given the impulsive nature of suicide attempts, prevention and intervention strategies need to be geared to those strategies that are going to be most effective to targeted populations. For example, reducing the access to means used to commit suicide has been proven to be very effective in various communities. However, it's often just pertinent to a particular community. For example, in India, they found that access to pesticides was a problem with suicide, and reducing that access ended up significantly reducing the suicide rates. We need to examine the data to analyze what are the means used to commit suicide and what are the strategies that would be focused depending on the cohort or the group of individuals who are using that. You know, it's interesting that we had a consent item about this being the Drug Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. And opioids are often a drug of choice for committing suicide. It's often difficult to tell because, obviously, you can overdose on opioids unintentionally. But I do know that there are a fair number who actually do overdose to commit suicide. An example of an opportunity that we would have to intervene in this has to do with the fact that 75% of the victims had contact with primary care providers within a year of their suicide, and 45% of the suicide victims had contact with primary care 1 month before they committed suicide. Primary care physician education programs that target depression recognition and treatment reduce suicide from between 23% to 73%, which is a significant reduction. So should that be a factor in one of the cohorts, that would be something we'd be looking at. So Given the data about the 231 and only 19% in 2014 had contact with mental health, we know that direct intervention is probably, it has limited effectiveness. In addition, so far the data which we've presented suggests that the broad community efforts that have gone on have also not been very effective in reducing the suicide rate in our county. Our county has a very diverse population, and the types of strategies that would work for one group may not work for another one. We also have been disproportionately affected by the downturn in the economy and the slow return back, which is much slower than many communities. Detailed data to clearly identify the risk factors and the means of suicide is lacking because of limited interagency collaboration. The only source of data that we were able to kind of, on a cursory basis, look at came from our death review committee, and that suggested that the approaches in our county are fairly siloed in that there's different efforts going on, but not much collaboration between them, and I think we believe that engaging them, including the medical community, to share data and come up with strategies that can be implemented in all sectors is essential if we're going to have any success with preventing suicide. The Suicide Prevention Intervention Innovation Project primary purpose is to promote better quality care and better outcomes using targeted strategies. So in essence, that is the core of our project. It will be developed and promoted through interagency and community collaboration. We're going to look at the issue from multiple angles. We're going to include representatives from various sectors, a common theme with focus on prevention. The CBOs, the health, the faith sector, diverse communities, the media, families affected by suicide, and others that seem to have had a connection to those who committed suicide. As I just mentioned, it's modeled on the focus on prevention effort that uses a collective impact model with different sectors being brought together to come up with a common agenda for solving a specific problem. Shared measurement, continuous communication, and mutually reinforcing activities among all the participants will be part of that. We need to define the cohorts, and that we're going to have to do more analysis of the data. A limited analysis has suggested that there's a cluster of suicides occurring in individuals above 50 years of age, mostly by lethal means like guns and hanging. The other concerning issue is our transitional age youth, who are 18 to 26, and the high rate of suicide in that group as well. There may be other cohorts. That's just what we were able to identify in a brief cursory look at it, which is very concerning. So using a community collaborative, we would be able to more thoroughly review the data, catalog the existing efforts that are going on, and brainstorm ideas that might lead to a better outcome. We want to develop a targeted strategic plan to increase the protective factors for each of the cohorts that are identified. And my assumption is those cohorts will have different strategies that work for them. We need to help individuals deal with stressful events, however that is, to build skills, strengths, and coping mechanisms to enhance resilience and to counterbalance the risk that is often there with childhood trauma, mental illness, and other events that have left people with no hope. The strategies will be evidence-based practice as much as possible, and we are also looking at targeting root causes, because I do believe that there may be some that we'll find in that may be helpful in the ongoing quest to reduce suicides. As indicated in the agenda, the learning questions to be answered: will this centralized infrastructure increase partnerships between individual sectors and their efforts decrease suicide? Will the use of the collective impact principles lead to a shared understanding of the suicide data, and will it impact suicide prevention planning? Can a collaborative using data from multiple sources to develop a suicide prevention plan that the community will support and embrace? And what methods are most effective in increasing suicide prevention awareness in the county? And last, will the use of collective impact principles result in a decrease in suicide numbers and rates? This is probably the most important question that will be answered by this innovative project. The project details, it's a three-year project. The evaluation of the outcomes will be at the end of the third year to determine how effective it was. This project will require the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission to approve it as an innovation project, and the estimated cost for the three-year duration will be approximately $628,000. The recommendations are that the board adopt the fiscal year 2015-2016 Mental Health Services Act update of March 26th, Suicide Prevention Intervention Innovation Project, and authorize the Behavioral Health Director to sign and submit the fiscal year 2015-2016 MHSA plan update of March 16th to the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission. At this point, I'm ready to take questions. Thank you.
Anyone on the board have any questions or comments at this time?
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, first of all, I just want to congratulate you and your department for taking this back and working through a very thorough plan that has some real hopes that we might prevent some suicides. I just think that it's just a topic that doesn't like to be discussed in our society, and just by discussing it, I think it's going to have some results. And that's as we devise the plan that hopefully will prevent some of these unnecessary deaths. So thank you very much. I'm full support.
Thank you. You are very correct that people don't want to discuss it. They're afraid if they mention it that it will actually cause the person to commit suicide. That is absolutely erroneous, that you've got to talk about it. So thank you.
Anyone else wishing to make a comment or question? Well, I would like to say that the board members, we've been receiving the sheriff's schedule reports of late. And it's really amazing. I think it's really brought, at least to my attention, how many of the reports are talking about threats of suicides or attempts. And I just don't believe that the community as a whole is very aware of this challenge. And I, too, want to congratulate you in addressing this issue.
Thank you. We're hoping by bringing all these sectors, we also create knowledge about this.
Right.
So we get different perspectives.
Right.
Thank you.
If there are not any additional questions or anything, I'll open it to the public. Is anyone wishing to make a comment on this? Or if not, I'll bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a first and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you. Now we will go to item B8, which is Kishmer Gill. Approving to accept annual fiscal report for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015. Or whomever wishes to make the report.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chairman Monteith, supervisors, Mr. Risen and Mr. Doering, Lauren Klein, Auditor Controller, and with me tonight is Kashmir Gill, Assistant Auditor Controller. We're here tonight to present to you the financial statements as of June 30th, 2015. Ms. Gill will be making the presentation this evening, which includes the comprehensive annual financial report and the single audit report. Before Ms. Gill begins her presentation, I would like to highlight the transition to the comprehensive annual financial report, or more commonly referred to as the CAFR. The last time a CAFR for Stanislaus County was prepared was in 2002. I would also like to point out our beautiful new report cover. It's gorgeous. Great improvement over our prior reports. I had asked staff to transition to a CAFR and update the report itself, and this year staff accomplished these goals. I would like to thank staff at departments countywide for their hard work in recording the financial information on a monthly and annual basis. This information is crucial for the county in order to be eligible to receive various funding. Additionally, County management relies on financial information in order to make decisions regarding the operations of their departments and the county as a whole. I would also like to thank auditor controller staff regarding their hard work required to generate these documents and to ensure the year-end financial information is accurate and completed. This work requires several months of work added to our normal daily processes. Specifically, I would like to thank auditor controller staff that bears the greatest burden of completing the financial close and compiling the audited financial statements. The staff consists of Cashmere Gill, who is the lead, Mike Furpo, Sam Groves, Nathan Amarant, Curtis Lee, and Melody Pugge. Ms. Gill will now provide you a high-level summary of the report itself and the financial information contained within.
Thank you. Good evening. Today's presentation is designed to provide highlights of the comprehensive annual financial report and of the single audit report for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015. Both of these reports were audited by the Certified Public Accountants Group of Brown Armstrong. The objective of an audit is to express an opinion that the financial reports are fairly stated. Consistent with prior years, the county received an unqualified or a clean opinion on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, also known as CAFR. The CAFR is based on generally accepted accounting principles. The single audit report is conducted in accordance with OMB requirements. OMB is the U.S. Office of Management and Budget. County programs which receive federal monies are required to have a single audit. The requirements under the single audit are strict. A discrepancy was noted during the single audit. A benefit payment was underpaid by a small amount in the county's foster care program. The department compensated the participant as soon as the error was detected, and procedures have been reviewed to ensure such oversights are minimized. This was not considered to be a significant finding, and it did not have an adverse effect on the single audit report. No other findings were noted during the audit. The most significant change during the fiscal year is the impact of a new accounting regulation regarding unfunded pension obligation. Statement 68, Accounting and Financial Reporting for Pensions, requires that a pension liability be reported for the full amount. In the past, the net pension liability was recognized for the unpaid portion of the annual required contribution. The new statement requires the entire unfunded amount to be recognized as a liability. To put things into perspective, I'm presenting a simple scenario of a homeowner whose monthly payments are $1,000. The outstanding mortgage balance is $150,000. In the traditional approach, if the homeowner was 3 months behind in payments, a liability of $3,000 would have been recognized in the financial report. Per the new regulation, the full outstanding mortgage of $150,000 is now required to be recognized as a liability. As a consequence of this new accounting statement, the county's pension liability increased from $2.2 million in the prior fiscal year to $202 million in the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015. This is an increase of $200 million, huge impact. Many employers are reporting pension liability for the first time or reporting large balances for the first time. The next slide provides a comparison of the county's unfunded pension liability relative to its counterparts. This graph shows county's net pension liability, or NPL, of $202 million to be the lowest, while San Joaquin County is at the high end at $1.2 billion. The net pension liability is calculated by actuaries and is based on actuarial assumptions. One last point regarding the new pension accounting. Net position represents the difference between county's assets and its liabilities. To recognize the beginning pension liability balance, a one-time adjustment was made to the net position. This contributed to the substantial decrease in the net position from $742 million in the prior fiscal year to $539 million, the net difference of $203 million. It is simply an accounting entry. On a positive note, the pension accounting did not impact the cash balance. County's cash and investment balance increased by $44 million, or 12% from prior fiscal year. The inflow of intergovernmental revenue contributed to the increase in this cash. Before we close, one last slide, which compares the net income to assets ratio with the surrounding counties. This ratio, also known as return on assets, measures how effectively assets are being used to generate net income. The top line in the graph represents the most recent fiscal year ending June 30, 2015. The county's net income to assets ratio of 7.6% is comparable to its peer group. The bottom line in this graph represents prior year ratios. It's interesting to note that the net income to assets ratios improved for all counties included in this illustration. This improvement reflects the recovery in the economy. To summarize, the clean audit opinions are consistent with prior years. The county implemented the new pension accounting statement, which requires governments to record unfunded pension liability in the financial reports. The retirement plan is funded at approximately 86%. The remaining 14%, which is unfunded, is recorded as a net pension liability in the financial report. County's cash and net position balances continue to grow. The county's return on assets improved from prior year, which is consistent with the nearby counties. With that, we can conclude our presentation. I also want to acknowledge the department staff, the staff in the auditor's office, and Lauren for their support in completing the financial reports. I want to thank you for your time.
Does anyone on the board have any questions or comment?
Just real quick. First of all, thank you guys very much. It's obviously there must be something else going on around the city tonight. Otherwise, this room would be full when you do this presentation. So don't feel bad.
I'm sure thinking.
You're up against something at the Gallows Center probably tonight. So
that's what it is.
Yeah. But I want to thank you guys. This is what this is our chance to shine, I say every year for the CPAs. And without the work that you guys do, we wouldn't be able to do anything up here that we do. Without good numbers, I say this every year, we're helpless up here in making bad decisions based on bad information. So it's what you guys, the hard work that you guys do, allows us to do what we do as far as managing the funds of the county. One thing about the GASB 68 there, which I think is a good thing, because so often we hear about the liabilities that we have as far as our pension liabilities, but it doesn't show up anywhere. It doesn't show up on our balance sheet, and I think that's a good thing. And your example, Kashmir, you know, in the private sector, we have to show the whole $150,000 liability on our books. We can't just show, and we break it down between current and non-current, but we can't leave that off. And I think that this is a good thing to get this on our balance sheet and for government to have this on their balance sheets so that people know as we look at our budgets and what we have to spend, that's a liability that we've always got to be reminded of and have it out there on the balance sheet. So I think that's a great thing. So thank you guys. Great, great work. I know probably no fun having to do this presentation every year, but I appreciate that you do it. So good work.
Certainly. Any other questions?
Yeah, one question, and I always look at, and I have a hard time understanding the liability component on the tobacco securitization. Can you, because it confuses me, we have the money and we securitized it, meaning someone else took the risk, but yet we're still carrying the risk. How is that, or can we?
Well, we have done some research on this. I know Stan and I have talked about it and with other staff at CEO's office. The consensus is that the counties who are part of the securitization, there is consistently reported as a liability on their books. And I think from an accounting standpoint, the reason is we have the matching revenue coming in for the securitization. I understand it's a conduit, it's a pass-through. And we're also the JPA, which is the nonprofit agency. It's a blended component unit of the primary government, and that's another reason why it's included as part of the county's financial report. It's a very technical question, and Stan can maybe give you an update, but we are looking into it. But we have done some research with other counties, and it's consistently recognized as a liability, long-term liability, in the primary government's financial reports.
It seems it skews our, yes. I think it's, you know, another more than $100 million, obviously a lot more.
Yes.
It just, again, because there was a reason, from what my understanding was on tobacco securitization, is that someone else took the risk,
right,
and for a percentage of the money, essentially, and we got it. But that's not, and you said it's a quasi-government agency that funded this that we're a part of? Are we a party to it?
I think there's a JPA, the nonprofit JPA, that's the Tobacco Funding Corporation is what we operated under, and that the board members or the majority of that is part of the, in the larger picture of the government, or the primary government, and so qualifies as what they consider a blended component unit. So their business is part of our financial report.
Cashmere, for what it's worth, I trust you more than I trust myself. I'm just asking the question.
And all nine counties who are in our current JPA make the same postings and recordings on their financial statements.
Okay.
So I might mention, I've had the same question, and just this week I've asked that we get a legal opinion on whether we need to book that liability, because I have my own personal concerns that I don't think it belongs on our books. It's about $119 million. Our revenue stream was actually purchased by this corporation that went out and did these bonds. And so just like when we sell a car, you know, we kind of wash our hands of any liability associated with that. And we essentially sold, the corporation purchased all our revenue rights. And in exchange, we got a lump sum dollar amount. But we'll seek legal opinion on that. But I do want to say, one of the things I really appreciate about both Lauren and Cashmere, and Cashmere and I have been working together for quite some time, and she's not afraid to tell me no. And you know, I really value that, because at the end of the day, we want to be an organization that's known for transparency and accountability and doing it right. And so sometimes we may not always see eye to eye, and I appreciate having an auditor staff that's willing to say, you know, I remember one time we were having a debate over the waste energy plant and whether it belonged as a enterprise fund or trust and agency, and we went around and around. But I really do value that Cashmere takes her job seriously, and Lauren, and they want to do the job right and accurate, and I think that has garnered my respect over the years. So I thank you for the good work you do.
Thank you for your support.
Yeah. Anyone wishing to make any other comment or questions? If not, I'll turn it over to the public. Anyone wishing to comment on this issue? If not, I'll bring it back to the board.
I will make a motion to accept our annual report.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Thank you. We'll go to correspondence.
This board has received a notice from Emanuel Medical Center regarding the closure of their orthopedic clinic located at 2121 Colorado Avenue in Turlock on April 8th, 2016.
Referred to the Health Service Agency.
This board has received a notice that the City of Modesto will be holding a public hearing on March 21st at 6 p.m. for the 2015 through 2023 Housing Element Update.
Referred to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received letters from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Small Business Administration's disaster designations for primary and contiguous counties, including Stanislaus County, due to the drought.
Referred to the Agricultural Commission, Seals and Weights and Measures, and Stanislaus Economic Development of Workforce Alliance.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and referred to the Chief Executive Office, the Risk Management Division. And at this time, I'm going to ask if anyone on the board has a report. If none, I'll then go to the Legislative, Physical, and Management report. Stan Reitzen.
No report this evening.
In that case, this meeting is adjourned.